My guest today is none other than 2023 General Counsel of the Year and wonderful human, Elizabeth Flett. Elizabeth, or Liz as I've come to know her, is the General Counsel and Company Secretary of Cancer Council New South Wales. We first connected on Instagram, and honestly, she is just a true delight, a breath of fresh air. This podcast just kind of happened randomly. We were both attending the Happy Lawyer Retreat, and I said, "Do you want to be on the podcast?" And so she jumped at the opportunity, although it was a little bit of a hesitant jump. It was her first podcast experience, and we were sat poolside, just relaxing and enjoying a break between the speakers at the conference. And she opened up and shared some of her story and her career path with me. And I'm so grateful that she kind of pushed through those nerves and spoke her truth and shared her journey so that I can share it on with you. I am sure you will, but please enjoy this episode with Liz Flett. All right, are you ready to go? We are ready to pod.
With such an honor.
Prosecco and a podcast poolside at the Happy Lawyer, Happy Life Conference with none other than 2023 General Counsel of the Year, just appointed and won this week. Elizabeth Flett, welcome to the Council Podcast.
Thank you for having me, Mel. Yay. It's such an honor.
Oh my gosh, she's so sweet. She's supposed to be attending the conference, and I said, "Do you want to do the podcast now?" And she said, "All right, why not?" And here we are. Let's do it. Cheers to you, lovely. On the win, and we'll get to that. But first, I'm going to ask you the one question that I ask all of my guests. If you had a limitless credit card, I know, you could only spend it at one shop, what shop would that be and why?
Oh, it'd probably be Flight Center. Do people buy flights through Flight Center anymore? That's where I'd spend it.
Okay.
Travel with my mum and my sister. Sorry, husband and kids.
And where are you going?
Oh,
I mean, everywhere. It's limitless.
Yeah, everywhere because it's limitless, but probably starting with Antarctica, the Galapagos, and doing all of the sort of natural wonders of the world.
That sounds amazing. So, thank you. I love that for you. Antarctica with mum and sis. Let's get to the lawyering. I want to hear about your time at law school and where you studied and your experience just generally of that time in your life.
Okay. So law school, I went to uni down in Tasmania, where I finished growing up. I don't know if I've yet finished growing up, but I moved out from the UK when I was 15 and we went straight down to Tassie because Sydney was too hot for mum. And so we started as far south as you could be for the weather and we loved it. So University of Tasmania, and I did a science and law degree. I had no idea what I wanted to do when I finished school. I knew I wanted to go to uni. I knew that I wanted to do something that would be, you know, intellectually stimulating. And I didn't know what I wanted to do immediately after school. But I'd always wanted to be a vet growing up. University of Tasmania does not have a vet school. I actually worked as a vet nurse throughout high school, uni. All of those things started with work experience and I enjoyed it. I was really good at dealing with people and difficult situations and helping people who were crying or sad or dealing with conflict. I would make the calls to do the debt collection. I was really good at that. And I wasn't sure what to do straight after high school. I was 17 when I finished and felt I was still, we'd just arrived in Tassie, you know, so I didn't want to go anywhere else. And so went to UTAS and thought, I'm going to study science and I'll transfer to vet school on the mainland when I'm old enough, when I'm big enough.
Love it.
Pluck up the courage. And I ended up studying law because down at UTAS, you can, or you could when I was there, I'm pretty sure you still can, you can pick up intro to law as a as one subject as part of another degree. And if you carry on after the first year, you, and if you get the marks to carry on, you do your combined degree. So it's an alternate pathway into law. So just some notes for anyone else out there who is considering an alternate way to law school who doesn't get 99 point bajillion on their yeah. high school results. So so that's what I did. I picked up a unit of law because my boyfriend at the time wanted to do law and I was doing science. He couldn't do direct entry law, and so he decided that he would pick up all the science subjects so we could spend every day all day together.
Oh,
we were high school sweethearts, and so that's what we did. Anyway, needless to say, it didn't work out between us. we were very much in each other's pockets. and it didn't work out between us. I carried on and did my science law degree. Going a little deep, straight into the deep end early. It's how I roll. So my mum was diagnosed with cancer pretty much my first week of uni. So it got very real very quickly, and this idea of doing a year of science and then transferring and moving away to the mainland suddenly became something that was no longer what I wanted to do. I wanted to, you know, be around for my mum.
Of course.
And I sort of became really invested in what I was doing at the time. I thought, look, just enjoy where you are right now. Vet can wait. And yeah, after the first year of doing intro to law, having never done legal studies at high school or anything like that, you know, I was pretty good at English, terrible at maths. So when it came to picking my science subjects, I was like, look, I'll do, you know, the zoology and the plant science, but I'm not doing the physics and I'm not doing the hard mathsy stuff, the statistics. So there was room for law. And I really loved it. And in fact, I got better marks doing the legal studies course than I did in any of my science subjects.
There you go.
So there you go. Long story. So I graduated from UTAS with science law, and still kind of thought maybe one day I'll go and do vet school. It was still in the back of my mind. But suddenly I was a lawyer. I had a law degree and thought, better go do my PLT course. And again, Tassie does it a little differently. Tassie does everything a little differently, sometimes for the better. And in this case, it was a really great course. It's a 6-month face-to-face practical course run by the University of Tasmania and the Centre for Legal Studies down there. And you get to sort of be a pretend lawyer, but you get, it was back in the day we had pigeonholes. Did you ever have a pigeonhole? No. Does anyone know what a pigeonhole is?
Is that like a place where you put letters and mail?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It's like shelves where you would put letters and mail. And we had, you know, we did have email accounts, but we would find out that we had a pretend matter to go and appear for at court based on if there was a note in our pigeonhole. So we were these law students running around the PLT centre, going from, you know, our class to go back and study and do an assignment. And we would be like constantly checking our pigeonholes to see if there was a letter in the pigeonhole. It was a little bit, if I'm honest, it was a little bit like waiting for the tooth fairy. It was funny. So we would find out that we had to go and appear in the magistrate's court, that we had, you know, half an hour to get up the hill and actually leave the building and trudge all the way to the real life magistrate's court after hours. And in an out of hours session, the magistrate would be there and we would have to, you know, plead our client's case. And yeah, actually go and defend a pretend real matter.
Right. Okay. So these are pretend real matters in the actual courts. Okay. We did it differently in Queensland for sure. And tell me about your first job after PLT as a lawyer. Where was that and what kind of practice?
Yeah. So that was in Sydney. I moved to Sydney with my now husband, and this was in 2009. I did a couple of little internships at the end of my uni studies, and they were both in Sydney, and I knew that I wanted to move to Sydney. So when my husband said, I'll be heading to Sydney after I finish uni, we weren't married at this point, I said, cool, I'm coming with you.
Nice.
So that was our plan. And I just assumed, you know, I'd done a couple of internships. It was very last minute. I did not do any article clerkships or summer clerkships. Summer clerkships is probably the term. So I didn't do any of that. And I thought, look, you know, I've done a couple of internships. I'm a fully qualified lawyer now. Done my PLT. I'll find work.
Ba-bow.
bow, 2009.
Right.
This is when all my friends who had the big jobs were being told, here's 10 grand, go and spend a year in Europe. We don't want you to start. And nobody was finding work. So I was applying for law graduate roles, 1 to 2 year lawyer roles, anything I could sort of see advertised, and thought maybe I've got a chance, you know, and yeah, there were no graduate roles advertised. They're just, yeah, none. So I was going for roles that were more experienced, and then I realized, look, I'm not getting anywhere. I'll go for paralegal roles.
Okay.
And they were mostly like very experienced paralegal roles. I was getting nowhere. And so I remember sitting on my lounge room floor crying, thinking, what have I done? I've literally thrown my life away. I could have gone off to vet school using what I knew and all my skills I'd gained through those 6-7 years working in a vet hospital, pursued my dreams. Instead, I pursued maybe somebody else's dreams and ended up with a degree that I don't really want to use, and I'm not getting anywhere with it. I was never passionate about being a lawyer. And the first sort of spark of maybe I can do something with this degree, maybe I do actually want to pursue this, was when I did legal prac, you know, actually putting the theory into practice, realizing, okay, this is what I enjoy again, thinking on my feet, speaking to people at difficult times. So yeah, feeling very demoralized. And I reached out to a recruiter and ended up getting a job that was just literally directing calls in a serviced office building to the right office. It was just work. I was like, I just got to pay the bills. So I spent, thankfully, only about 2 weeks doing that before I got a call back from one of the many recruiters that I had just sort of, you know, bombarded with my CV and to the emails that I'd written. And one person contacted me and said, we've got a role. It's for a company called CSR Limited. And they're a listed company. They're looking for an assistant company secretary. Would you be interested? And I said, yes. I was so sick and tired of sitting in this serviced office building, literally just answering the phone and directing it to the right office. So I started there, still feeling pretty lost in the law, thinking, what am I going to do? But I realized that they actually had an in-house legal team. I didn't realize that until I'd started. I came across the general counsel in the photocopying room one day. We got talking. He found out, you've got a law degree? You're a qualified lawyer? And I said, yeah, should we have a coffee? Should we catch up? Any room for me and your team? And he brought me on to his team after I'd, yeah, sort of done what I needed to do for that short-term contract.
I love that. Thank you for sharing. So you went straight in-house, essentially. Oh, she's taking a sip of the Prosecco.
I need a sip.
Take a sip. Nodding, yes?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. I did. I went straight in-house. And I, you know, I'd had a little bit of that exposure to small firm practice from the practical experience that we got down in Tassie. But yeah, this was my first exposure to in-house, and it was at an ASX-listed 100 company. There was a lot of change at that time. They were acquiring new businesses and selling off a lot of businesses that they had. And so we were straight into M&A land. And it was a great experience with a fantastic GC who then at the time gave me, you know, a bit of advice about where to go with my next steps in my career. Because some of the business had they'd gone through the busy period of all of the M&As, and they no longer needed the additional headcount in the legal team. He knew that they would be reducing headcount, and he gave me and another paralegal who was in the team sort of the heads up and said, look, you know, you girls are great and I want to help you make your next move. And he said, but, you know, you're both really great in-house baby lawyers, but if you want to stay in-house, if you want to be really good in-house, you've got to go and get some private practice experience. And that was really the message at the time, was, you know, you don't just go straight to in-house. You have to have private practice experience. Now, I think we all know that today that's not the case, and so many people are proving that that's not the case. In my own team, actually, I've got two lawyers who've never worked in private practice, and they are brilliant.
Same.
There is nothing about their skill set that, you know, screams lack of experience or you should have gone to private practice. So I'm a huge advocate for going in-house first is absolutely fine. But I listened to the advice at the time and was put in touch with a firm who I then ended up going on to work for.
So she went in-house and then to private practice. It's not usually the other way. Okay. And that is such a, picking up on what you said, that is such a rhetoric that I speak about often online and on the podcast from time to time about this, you know, the career paths for in-house lawyers. And, you know, us lawyers are rule followers. We love rules. We love, here's the perfectly laid out career path for you. Here's the exact PAE that you should go from this firm to this firm, this exact experience, and then you're ready to come in-house. And if you just tick all of these boxes, you'll have a very successful career. Tick, tick, tick. And in fact, some of the catalysts for even starting this podcast was because I could see that that was not the case at all for most of us, and that it might be helpful to share stories like yours.
Yeah, exactly.
To highlight, well, no, our career paths are actually almost as unique as us. And some of these rules, look, they may have served a purpose and they may still to a point. And for certain types of in-house departments with certain types of GC, then perhaps a little bit more traditional. I understand why they might want that experienced kind of private practice, you know, if it is in the litigation, if it is in the M&A. But yeah, the more that I see our industry growing and the types of departments and people that are coming into in-house, there is a space for almost everybody, I think.
Oh, I completely agree. Couldn't agree more. And I do think as well that when I reflect back on my career and ask myself the question, you know, am I glad that I had that experience? I still don't yet know how to answer it, if I'm completely honest.
Wow.
I know that I picked up a lot of skills, but it wasn't nurturing to me, and I don't know that it was particularly enriching. So there was certainly, for some time, some lasting damage.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that, you know, hopefully the culture in firms is changing, and people are more aware of, you know, burnout and also, you know, behaviours that can amount to just people
bullying.
I'm going to call it out, bullying, you know, without sort of suggesting that was, you know, exactly my experience. But I think I went into it really naively, thinking that the care and the nurturing that I received from the general counsel who I worked with and the people around me in the corporate world would be what I would find in a law firm. And it was, you know, honestly, it was I was going to find my words for a second, but, you know, I felt almost a little bit misled. And I'd had such good relationships with the practitioners that I'd come across down in Tassie in the PLT course, because as you're taught by the practicing community, you don't have law lecturers, you know, so you get that real experience, get to know people, make connections. And obviously there were, you know, different characters down there. It wasn't a Sydney thing per se, but just such a different world. I worked in, you know, a mid-tier national firm, now a global firm, that the same property practice group. So look, really grateful for the skills that I picked up, but
not so much for the trauma.
Definitely not grateful for the trauma. In saying that, it was a redirection, and it has led me to where I am now.
Well said. And your experience, unfortunately, is so common. And I get DMs on my Instagram on a weekly basis from currently practicing lawyers in firms like the one you've described that are still not loving law and loving the practice, and they are burnt out. It's relentless. It's a treadmill. There's billable units, there's targets, the pressures are real from the partners, who are also under significant pressure from their clients, who are us, you know, in-house lawyers often, or sometimes not. It's the industry, it's bigger than the cogs, and yet we're all part of it, and we're also all part of the change. And you articulate so
so much of what I had experienced in different ways in private practice and also in-house as well, which is an interesting one because I think people, you kind of find crappy people everywhere, right, in all different workplaces. And there is work to be done on changing that.
Yeah, there definitely is. And I think what I've learned as well about burnout, if I can go down that path for a sec, is that, you know, I used to always think that burnout is just what happens when you throw yourself into a high tempo environment and you're busy at work or you're working long hours. That's definitely a factor. You know, we need rest and our bodies need rest. The body doesn't lie. But for me, burnout was also, rather than sort of a fast combustion, it was a slow friction. It was like the plates were grinding together over time. It was that friction for me of being in an environment that didn't nurture and accommodate for me to be able to bring out my personality. My personality was something that wasn't favourable in that environment. I was too colourful. I was too chatty. I got my work done, you know, and I built really strong relationships with clients. I wanted to do things differently. I wanted to be innovative. I didn't understand why contracts had to speak as if they were from the 14th century. You know, I wanted to make them plain language. I wanted to democratize them. I wanted to make sure that my clients who were, you know, property managers or assistants within the organizations could use them and understand them, and actually to make sure that there wasn't going to be a dispute, that people could understand what was in the contract. It was a guide, it was a manual to them. So this was a little bit too forward thinking, I think, for the practice group that I was working in. And I didn't, as a junior in that environment, I didn't get to sort of express myself. And there was a real disconnect as well with what I needed in my personal life, being able to have a bit more flexibility. You know, I'd kill it at work, but then I wanted to take that spontaneous afternoon off to, you know, my husband went away a lot for work, and, you know, to go and take that random afternoon off to spend with him, but I couldn't. We were busy, couldn't see him, missed the weddings, missed the birthdays. So it was, for me, it was that friction over time. And it all ended up, I'll go into the change, I'm gonna edit this part.
Yeah, and I can see where you're going with this. There's a sustained period of this friction around burnout and that hustle culture that was and is so pervasive in the law and in business, and it has an end date. Whether we like it or not, we aren't machines. Tell me about that time for you as a baby professional coming up, finding your limit. You kind of found the limit. What was that like, and then how did you move through it?
The catalyst for me with moving on from that environment was actually my mum's health. And it wasn't just my mum's health, but it was the way that that environment responded to it. It was really clear to me that I was not going to be able to spend the time that I needed to be with my mum and care for her. And so I must have been able to see this coming. So I'd obviously spent a long time thinking about being a vet. knew that I'd give the law a red hot go. And at this point, you know, I mean, I'd wake up and cry most days going to work, wipe my face dry, get on with the day, and think tomorrow will be different. It's two years of that. Mm-hmm. And it was almost from, I think, about, you know, the fifth or sixth week that this started. So I'd known for a while that this is not where I wanted to be, but I felt really powerless because I'd done in-house, been told I can't get back there unless I do 3 to 5 years. And so getting into that second year thinking, I can't stay here, I can't do this. So just randomly one evening, I thought, I'm going to throw in an application to go and study veterinary science at the University of Sydney. And I did that. And then actually it was a number of weeks after that we got the news about mum's health. So, and I should say my mum is well.
Good.
And she is.
Hi, mum.
Hi, mum.
We love you. We love our mums.
I love my mum so much. She's my best person. I went to speak to my employer about what was going on in my personal life. The response wasn't great. It was a bit sort of like, well, there's a lot of work here to keep your mind off things. And I don't think it was intended maliciously. I just think that there was a bit of a lack of understanding about how to support somebody who was going through something difficult in that kind of environment. I would like to sort of give the person, grace, I think, because people don't always know how to handle difficult conversations. And I think it's an education piece. And actually, at the Cancer Council, we do a lot of work with people to help them understand how to deal with people who are impacted by cancer diagnosis. Yeah. So it is an area of need. Obviously that's, and I think as well in the law, there's a lot of people who don't really know how to deal with people, particularly in law firms. So anyway, I had found out a few days before that I'd been offered a place at the University of Sydney to go and study. So I drafted up my resignation letter and I took a deep breath and a huge leap of faith. Because at that point in time, I felt that I was throwing away my law career and that I'd never go back. So I did that. Wow. And a couple of weeks later, I put on my civilian clothing, went out shopping, bought a new wardrobe because I had to blend in with the cool kids at university. I was 26, but I was an old married 26. And I, for the first time in a few years, I went and attended my first uni lecture as an undergrad again.
Wow.
So that was in 2014. And I spent a good 9 months doing the pracs. A lot of it involved going out to farms.
Have you put your hand up like the back of a cow? Have you done that?
I have.
Yeah, oh my God. I've seen that. I've seen that you vets have to do that.
I have done that.
Oh, my God. To check if it was pregnant?
No. This was just, well.
Just because. Just vet things.
Actually, when I think back to it, I can't explain why they got us to do that other than just the joy of the experience.
Oh, that's adorable.
One for the gram.
Oh, my gosh.
We did lots of things. So I did that for 9 months I really loved it. But during that time, I realised that, look, I don't think that it was necessarily the desire to be a vet that pulled me there. It was just the desire to get away from what I was experiencing in the law and to look after my mental health. Who decides they're going to take a break to look after their mental health and then throws themselves into a vet science degree? Someone with maybe a little bit of a high performance A-type
yes.
personality.
Yes.
So that's how I chose to spend that year. And it was flexible and accommodating enough that I could spend the time I needed to with mum. And it was a fantastic year. During that time, though, the pressure of paying Sydney bills and also I had a friend in my ear saying, when are you going to come and work? When are you going to go back to work and go and be a lawyer? I was like, never. I deleted my LinkedIn profile. That's how serious I was about it. Like, gone. No connections to the law. And I really enjoyed it. But there were a few, I probably won't go down the track of all the challenges with the bureaucracy of the uni. But I ended up getting a part-time role working in-house.
Okay.
So a friend of mine said, look, I really need someone in my team. And we used to work together at the law firm. She said, I need somebody in my team. Can you come and work for me? And I said, I'm only coming back to the law on my own terms. And she sort of said, well, what are your terms? Mm-hmm. So I thought, I'll go in big.
Yes, I love that.
So I wanted to work part-time. I wanted all the time I needed off to go and do my pracs. And, obviously show me the money. And she said yes to all of it, so I probably should have asked for more. Who knows? But I spent the next nearly 3 years working at Brookfield GIS, now known as BGIS, for an amazing GC there called Kate Boskovitz. And we had an absolute blast. At times it was just the two of us running the legal department together and working on some massive contracts. So we were dealing with PPPs, which is public-private partnerships, big contractual arrangements between often Brookfield, the construction arm of the business, actually huge behemoth business in its own right, but they would go and build hospitals, and the business I worked for would enter into the agreement to maintain that facility for, you know, 20, 30 years. So it was big contracts and really high tempo. I would be flying in and out of Canberra or Brisbane or somewhere else to go and negotiate these big deals with a whole team of lawyers from a top tier firm on the other side of the table.
Oh my God.
And often just me and my CEO and commercial manager on my side of the table.
Nice.
Maybe a couple of externals, depending on which point we were at in the negotiation. And I was representing the business. And I loved it. And that's where, while I was still part-time studying, I would then go and take 2 weeks after closing that deal to go and head out bush and go and pack. I pack cows.
Put your arm on the cow.
Gloves on.
Oh, so safety first.
Obviously. But I do actually have a slight obsession with cows. I love cows.
Well, I should
and
hope so.
If you've seen my Instagram page, whenever I can put cows on there, I will.
I have noticed that.
My mum still, she lives in Tassie and very close to farmland. And there's, depends, you know, if you go down in spring, there's baby cows in the fields. And I'm the weirdo that pulls over. I'll say, stop the car. We have to pull over.
Cows.
And pat the baby cows. Oh. I mean, who doesn't love them? They're
so
cute.
So awesome.
It's really awesome. So I would go and do this. And I mean, I was trying to, at that time, then balance doing really high tempo, high pressure legal work in-house with doing the studies. And I sort of came back to the question of, you know, what am I doing and why and where do I want this to go? And I really loved in-house, and I decided that, I wasn't ready to let go of my legal career. The money's hard to let go of. Eventually it's hard to let go of. But more than that, it was just, I had the opportunity to work with people and to do challenging things. And yeah, I mean, you get to interact with a lot of really interesting people in an in-house role. And most of them are not lawyers.
Yeah.
So that's the best part of it. When you have to interact with a lawyer, often it's the one that you choose to interact with when they're on your team. So that's what I really liked about it. And in the end, yeah, law gave way to my legal career, and I chose to stay in the law. That was really because I was offered an amazing role working for a huge agribusiness company. So I got to combine my passion and purpose and get paid for it.
And the law. And get paid.
Law.
Passion,
yeah.
Purpose, payment.
And what is there? There's that concept of wellness or happiness called ikigai, mm-hmm. and it's that Japanese concept of, if you can combine something that you're passionate about or interested in with something that fulfills your purpose and get paid for it, then that is sort of the little intersection of happiness. So yeah, that was a next step for me. I ended up finishing up with the studies and going in to work full time in this ag business.
I love it. And you gave law a second chance, or maybe it gave you a second chance. And I'm so happy that you've stayed in the law and that you're part of this amazing in-house community that's, I think, flourishing really in Australia and beyond. And we're coming together like never before and owning our power and our space and being really proud to be in-house counsel, which may not have always been the case back in the day. Maybe not, but that is something that's shifting. And yeah, I love that you're part of this community and you're such a bright, shining star. I want to talk about your current role. Tell us about your role at Cancer Council and what it's like to work in the not-for-profit space.
Yeah, it's so my current role is the General Counsel of the Cancer Council New South Wales, and I have a brilliant team. There's three of us lawyers in the team. I'm also the company secretary and have somebody supporting me in that role, and we just hired our first legal administrator. So that's quite a decent sized team for in-house, and I really appreciate how lucky I am to have that many people on my team. And yeah, together we handle all of the legal and sometimes not so, you know, not purely legal work that comes across our desk. We're relied on to, you know, provide practical commercial advice, just being that place of common sense as well. And something that I really love is that actually Cancer Council is, we have a lot of projects and we have a very efficient and well-managed project management office. So the team that basically helps Cancer Council to deliver so many great programs and initiatives, and it's really well executed. So we are brought in early and valued as a core part of the projects team.
For any of our international listeners who aren't aware of Cancer Council outside of Australia, what is the nature of the organisation?
So we are Australia's largest cancer charity. We're a not-for-profit with charitable status, which means that all of the profits that we make, so the term not-for-profit is a bit misleading because we love profit. It's just about what we do with it. So all of the funds that we raise and all the money that we make from what we do go back into our mission. And our mission is to ensure that anybody impacted by a cancer diagnosis has access to resources and support. And we also undertake activities to prevent cancer through research and also through education around both nutrition and, you know, making sure that you're not doing anything that could potentially put you at higher risk of cancer. And we also advocate for policy that will support people affected by cancer or go to, preventing cancer. So we're part of Cancer Council New South Wales is part of a federation, and together all of the cancer councils undertake their work with the aim of a cancer-free future.
I love the vision, and I also note again that you're pulling together a little bit of it's a purpose here because it's something that's affected your nearest and dearest, and that's a really common thing, and you get to actually work in the space that you've been affected by and your family has as well. So I love that, and I love Daffodil Day. I absolutely adore it, and I brought some daffodils this year specifically with you in mind. I was like, I'm gonna get some beautiful little daffodils and support the Cancer Council. And I also know that there's a range of sun protection products as well that the Cancer Council promotes and supports. And do you make them? Do you make those? Is that like a production thing as well? You're putting out sunscreen? Yes. Are you a sunscreen lawyer?
I can be any kind of lawyer you want me to be, Mel.
A cow lawyer?
I was a cow lawyer.
Okay. Yes, agribusiness cow lawyer.
Agribusiness cow lawyer. I am now a daffodil lawyer, a sunscreen lawyer. So no, we don't manufacture the sunscreen ourselves. We procure the sunscreen with our branding and sell that through our retail stores and hats and rashies and all of those good things. Please slip, slop, slap.
Slip, slop.
Seek and slide. Everyone forgets the last two, which is seek shade and slide on your sunnies.
So, yes, daffodil lawyer, sunscreen lawyer, and General Counsel of the Year lawyer.
Yes, yeah.
Congratulations. Thank you. I want to go there. I'm so proud of you. I wasn't at the awards this year. I didn't go because I was like, I can't do two conferences in a week. That's ridiculous. And I'm coming to this one. No, but you did. You've done two conferences in a week.
I know. I think my social battery was very low when I looked at booking all my tickets. I thought, I need to be around lots of sparkly, wonderful people. I'm glad that's when I booked the tickets because I've had the best week. Both here in the beautiful King's Cliff, sitting by the pool with Mel, and also at the ACC National Conference in Canberra earlier this week. So the awards were brilliant.
Tell me all the things about the conference and the awards.
All the things. Okay. So all the things. I I did a big thing at the conference. I decided actually at the beginning of this year that this would be my year of yes to the things that I would usually say no to. All the good things anyway, all the things you're supposed to say yes to that you say no to. So one of those things for me is public speaking and putting myself out there professionally. So even though last year actually we were shortlisted as finalists for the awards, and we've had a pretty good trot of being named finalists for a few different awards, this year I decided that as well as nominating my team for the awards and putting in my nomination, I would also step up and speak at the conference. So as it happened, so Kate Sherburn, the brilliant GC at Who Gives a Crap,
who we love, I think episode 6 maybe, I've interviewed Kate on the podcast early days.
You have, and I've listened to that. That was a great interview. I love Kate. And actually, Kate was somebody who, when I was considering the Cancer Council role, I reached out to because I wanted to connect with somebody else who was doing purpose-driven work and just kind of check in. I don't even know what I was trying to achieve. It was a really random call. I reached out to Kate. She was sitting behind her desk on the call. I was probably running late from dropping kids off and I'd moved our time around and I was so flustered and then I was so nervous to speak to the GC of Who Gives a Crap, thinking, oh my God, she's amazing, she's a rock star. And we got on the call, her mannequin in the background with the toilet paper dress.
I love that beautiful
It's
thing.
So beautiful. And I just kind of, told her the opportunity that had been presented to me and what did she think? She didn't know me from a bar of soap. I don't even know what I needed. I in my mind, I'd already said yes to the role, but I was really nervous that going from working in a big corporate in-house environment to going into not-for-profit was somehow potentially a step backwards, or it was a step into a softer, easier space that might not have been a good career move. And really nervous about you know, the impact that that might have on me professionally. So I wanted to hear from somebody else, I think, her why, and just remember that spark of passion that was leading me to say yes to the role. So anyway, Kate did exactly that. You only have to speak to her for 5 minutes to be absolutely, you know, covered in the fairy dust that she exudes around her love for her role.
Absolutely.
And it sort of gave me that, you know, it really affirmed my decision. So I've always admired Kate. And when she and I connected at the Legal Innovation and Tech Fest last year, we had a few drinks and we were chatting about something very random. We were talking about using love languages at work. And we decided a few drinks in that this had to be a conference topic.
Yes.
And so a couple of weeks later, she sent me an email with the draft proposal to the ACC with our speaker topic in there. And every part of me wanted to say, oh, no, this was just a joke. I'm not really going to do this. I'm not going to stand up in front of a room of serious lawyers and talk about essentially, you know, the warm and fuzzies. But I said yes. It was my year of yes. And lo and behold, it got through. The judges loved it. And so that's what we spoke about at the conference. We got up on stage and did a big thing.
And in beautiful pink pants, no less.
The pink pants. And Kate had amazing pink pants. I had pink shoes. We were all of the colours. And it was a really great session.
I've received secondhand, because I wasn't there and I have said FOMO, feedback that it absolutely was. You both nailed it. And I'm not surprised at all. And talking about love languages in a way of how you communicate with the business. And the example you gave me last night, love languages being communicate via, like, you know, gifts, and that might be like templates that you might give to the business so they can do self-service. And like, I just love that. I think you guys are going to have to do a roadshow on this one.
I think we will.
Yeah.
I love that. And then the award.
The award. So we were nominated in 3 categories. I say we, my team. I was nominated as a finalist for Not-for-Profit Lawyer of the Year. And my team was nominated in the Small Legal Team of the Year category, or I should say shortlisted as finalists. So we were there to potentially, you know, to hear about 3 different categories. So the first 2 were called and we didn't win the award. And at that point I thought, oh, great, I can put away the draft speech. kick back and enjoy my champagne, celebrate everybody else. There was such an amazing group of people there from all different industries and different areas of in-house, government, not-for-profit, private sector, you know, we had telcos, insurance companies, the works. The ACC conference is epic, and if you don't already go, you should go.
I know.
And FOMO. And yeah, so look, I was just having a great time celebrating everybody else. And then when General Counsel of the Year came up, I was just getting ready to celebrate the amazing people on my table who were also shortlisted, sitting back, relaxing, thinking, oh, get ready just to start applauding someone else. I did not think I even had a chance in this category. You know, to me, it was always something that, you know, it was an award that was given to people working on huge transactions with massive dollar values attached to it. That being said, I'm so incredibly proud of the work that we've done and feel that everything that we've done is absolutely deserving of this award. And when my name was called out, huge shock, massive excitement, the nerves kicked in, and I walked up there and collated that award. So it was amazing. I'm not going to lie. I loved it.
Good.
Every second.
And you deserve it all. And you looked fantastic. Where was that dress from?
Oh, that dress was from just I think it's a UK brand, Never Fully Dressed. Yeah, they have some fun things.
Gorgeous. So, I loved
it. Last minute online purchase.
Love the print. What does it take to win General Counsel of the Year?
Look, I think you'd have to ask the judging panel that one.
She's being humble. What does it take?
What does it take?
Because what did you do? Well, what was your last year like?
Okay. First and foremost, I would say that it's, unless you're a sole counsel, it's never the work of one person. A general counsel is not doing all the work by themselves. And so the key ingredient for me was my incredible team. It really was. You know, those guys work so hard and work so well with the business and show up every day with the same, you know, positivity and passion that I do. And we all pull in the same direction. So first of all, I think it takes a great team. But the GC Award, I suppose, recognises leadership of that team. All I can really say is that for me, I try and bring a sense of being first yourself and being a human being to the team. And secondly, you know, for me, it's really making decisions that align with the purpose of the business. So I think, you know, with any in-house role, you've got to be aligned with the strategy. You've got to get to know your stakeholders. You've got to really invest in supporting them and making sure that you know, that you are enabling. It's certainly not my phrase. I haven't coined this, but I'll take it anyway. Rather than being the department of no, be the department of how. You know, sometimes the how is not practical and it's not realistic, and therefore it becomes a no. But I think if there's a way of doing something, it's our job to support helping them get there. In saying that, I'm sure I have had to say no plenty of times as well. But look, you know, so really what we've just done great work, and the work speaks for itself. The types of projects that we've worked on, I think, were probably very interesting to the judging panel. Cancer Council has kicked some huge goals in the last 5 years, but certainly in the last 2 years since I've been there. We've entered into partnerships with major philanthropists, and we're doing incredible work in our Pacific region to help eliminate cervical cancer. We have been behind the a lot of the work around bringing to light the evidence around vaping in young people and helping to move regulatory reform. And on top of that, you know, there's been other initiatives in cancer research, advocacy, prevention. And the team that we work around just works tirelessly. So we throw our energy into it. And I think, you know, what does it take for me to do that? It takes being fully aligned with the purpose. And, you know, I say I haven't had a single day where I've woken up and thought, why am I doing this? Or do I have to go to work today? You know, a few days where I've thought I should probably take a break soon, need a bit of leave. But I've never questioned.
You haven't woken up crying every day 6 weeks in.
Not a single time. And it's really affirming. So you know, when I sort of talk about what does this award mean, it means a lot because it for me really reaffirms that I'm meant to be here. I questioned for so long, am I meant to be a lawyer? What am I meant to be? You know, I'm a bit of an overthinker, always trying to find, you know, the signs and the meanings of life. And for so long wondered, you know, what am I meant to be? And so this is a really nice symbol of exactly that, a really full circle moment. I mean, I had the full circle moment getting the job, and honestly seeing the impact every day affirms that. But I think for me, being accepted in a professional context and feeling like I was accepted and embraced within the legal community is always something I felt like maybe I didn't fit. I jumped around and moved roles a little too frequently. I didn't spend enough time in private practice. I didn't do it the right way. I quit law to pat cows. I came back on my own terms. I've done it really differently, and I didn't think that I fit in to the mold of people who win awards like this.
Well, you most certainly do. Give me a hug. I'm so proud. Oh, I'm so proud of you, and I'm so proud to know you, and you do belong here, and you get to claim this space. And I love that we got to do this podcast at this time. We're the only in-house lawyers here. Everybody else are family, criminal, personal injury, wills, estates, conveyancing, litigation, and we're like, hey!
Sole practitioners,
law firm owners.
Absolutely killing it, boss. Amazing. Ladies, and men.
And we're like, hi, we want to be part of the glitter confetti as well.
We want to be part of the glitter. I thought for so long I was the only lawyer that liked crafting, and, you know, I've got a pottery wheel, and I really love to sew and make dresses and things. Funnily enough, I really don't love doing it with my kids because they make so much mess. But I really like doing it by myself. It's my meditation. It's my way of kind of just tuning out all the noise. And when I came across this group on Insta and saw, oh my God, what? There's a whole gang of lawyers who like to craft and like glitter and sparkle. And I was like, I've just got to get my way to that conference. So I'm here.
And she's here. And we got to do this council podcast in this beautiful, right by the pool. It's been like weird audio. If this comes out decent, I'll be so happy. It is what it is. Done is better than perfect. Liz, thank you for coming and being my guest. Last question. We'll wrap it up. What's next in your year of yes?
Oh, there's not much of the year left.
All right, next year. What are you doing? Is it the year of no?
I should have just left it there.
Is it no? Are you staying with the yes?
I think next year is the year of yes and. So I've done a lot of things that I thought would be impossible. I mean, I didn't even think I would ever be a GC. I didn't think I would end up being, you know, doing what I'm doing now. So I had this conversation with my husband the other night, and he said, so what's next? You've done all the things that you said you'd never do. I said, I've got to make a new list of things I'll never do. So my job is to go and make that list, things I'll never do, big, hairy, audacious goals.
Love it.
So yeah, and we'll see. Keep you posted.
Thank you, Liz. Love chatting with you. I'm so excited to see what's next. You're amazing.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Council. Please subscribe to the show so that you don't miss future episodes. And while you're there, it would mean the world to me if you could leave a review for this show. Tell me what you'd love to hear more of and where you're listening from. To learn more about in-house practice, follow me on LinkedIn and Instagram